Apocalypse and romance, mythology and high school, princesses and heroines, heartthrobs and nerds. This is the landscape of young adult literature. This hour, I'll talk with three young adult novelists. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Fantasy writer Sarah Prineas is taking on traditional fairy tales in her latest series, starting with Ash and Bramble. Molly Bacchus received critical acclaim for her realistic representation of high school life in The Princesses of Iowa, and Wendy Del Sol reinvented the story of the Snow Queen in her Stork trilogy. Today, I'll talk with these novelists about the worlds they've created, this crowded category, and writing for teens and tweens. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's been called the second golden age of young adult fiction. No matter how you look at it, young adult fiction is hot right now. For many readers and writers, it's also very, very important. And this hour, I'm going to talk with three young adult novelists who live in Iowa. Fantasy writer Sarah Prineas is now taking on traditional fairy tales in her latest series, starting with Cinderella in the book Ash and Bramble. She lives in Iowa City and is with me now. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. I'm kind of wondering what the first YA golden age was. Let's talk about that when we get there.
And I think there is room for interpretation. Molly Bacchus is also here with us today. She received a lot of critical acclaim for her realistic representation of high school life in The Princesses of Iowa. Of course, that book took place in Iowa. She's getting her MFA at Iowa State University right now, but talking to us today from New Mexico. Hello, Molly.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Wendy Del Sol reinvented the story of the Snow Queen in her Stork trilogy. She lives in Des Moines. Hello, Wendy.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. And Sarah, I want to start with you. I want all of you to give people an idea of what you're writing. I mentioned that you've done a lot of fantasy writing. You've done a lot of writing for middle grade students. So the Magic Thief series, which was really aimed at middle to upper elementary, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And now you've moved up a little bit. So tell me about the idea for Ash and Bramble.
Ash and Bramble came out of this idea that we are all shaped by the narratives in our lives. And shaped in some ways and driven by them in some ways. Like this idea that you're supposed to marry this cute guy and live happily ever after and the picket fence and all that stuff. So Ash and Bramble was my attempt to unpack that narrative and say, well, what if Cinderella really doesn't like wearing fancy shoes and ball gowns? And what if she doesn't really like the prince very much and wants something else, you know, something completely different?
And it also has a little bit of that post-apocalyptic type feel that we get from a lot of young adult novels these days. I mean, there's certainly a villain, but it's not sort of the stepmother type villain that we associate
with.
Yeah,
I think you could spoil it. It's the fairy godmother is the villain of this book, and she's trying to create a world that is basically a dystopic world. She's the main force that they have to fight against in the book.
And this is the start of a series for you?
Second book, which comes out in September and is called Rose and Thorn, is set 50 years later, and it is about Sleeping Beauty, who doesn't do much sleeping in the book.
All right. And when is that coming out?
That's September.
All right. So very soon. Something to look forward to. Molly Bacchus, you wrote about a very realistic world in your Princesses of Iowa. This is high school as a lot of us knew it and a lot of us know it today. Tell me a little bit about the idea behind The Princesses of Iowa.
I was teaching middle school when I was writing this book, actually in rural New Mexico, after graduating from Grinnell College. As I was teaching 7th and 8th grade, I was surrounded by bullies. As you all may remember, middle school can be kind of rough. And I was really fascinated by my own students and the sort of social politics that were playing out. And I was interested in the fact that the sort of quote-unquote good girls or the perfect girls in the grade often got sort of overlooked, certainly by teachers. They just tended to pass. You know, they weren't troublemakers. They got good grades. They were pretty. They were always on time, whatever. And so, but as a, you know, former teenager myself, I knew that no one, you know, that everyone is more than what they seem to be, and no one is perfect. And so I started getting interested in sort of unpacking that and looking beyond the sort of surface level of what we see in characters and people around us. And also just got interested in investigating sort of bullying and labeling and all of the ways that teenagers in particular, but all of us, hold each other to different sort of standards and labels.
And this is a book that the young women in the book are, and the protagonist of the book is going through a really difficult time of life. You start with a car accident that could have been much, much worse, but still it was pretty bad. The driver was drunk, and it was one of those moments that could have changed lives or ended lives forever. And it's interesting that she is not dealing with consequences, at least not outwardly.
Right. Yeah. and you know, I've actually gotten some criticism for that. But I do think that it's very common in children's literature in general to expect to see very sort of cut and dry consequences to your actions. You know, in young adult novels, like if you have sex, you will get pregnant. If you drink and drive, you will kill someone. And I think that we all know that that's not always true. You know, a lot of times we make bad decisions and nothing happens, you know. And we get away, you know, unscathed, or at least, you know, maybe unpunished. And so I was interested in investigating a world that was a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more subtle and more brutal, I guess, because, you know, in real life, a lot of times bad things happen and no one is held accountable for them. And it's just kind of crappy for everyone involved. So.
Well, and a lot of the consequences, I mean, you write a lot about facades too, you know, in talking about those sort of perfect student, perfect girls that you don't necessarily think there's a lot going on behind the facade. You go beyond that facade to try to figure out what is going on.
Right, exactly. And also I was interested in all the ways that kind of pressure is harmful to girls, especially that we put so much weight on how girls look and how they act, and we carve really narrow channels for girls to walk in, and when they step out of them, they are punished often. And so I was interested in looking at that and, you know, exploring characters that are trying to find their way out of those very narrow confines.
Well, and Wendy Del Sol, you also were dealing with some of those same issues, although in a more fantastic world. You kind of reinvented the story of the Snow Queen, although it's almost unrecognizable in your Stork trilogy. There is a lot of magic and mysticism that goes into that, but it also takes place in a high school world. Tell me a little bit about the concept.
Yeah, I tend to like stories that have a paranormal element, even in adult fiction. And so when I was, you know, trolling for ideas for a book, I came across like the cultural symbol of birth, which is the stork. And, you know, there really isn't a underlying mythology to that. So that was something that I found fascinating. And so it is a contemporary setting, so it is considered light fantasy. It's about a girl who is moving from Southern California to Chile, northern Minnesota. It's her mother's hometown of Icelandic heritage. Once there, she discovers that she is by birthright a member of this a coven of white witches who guide souls to the right mother on earth. I use Norse mythology, Icelandic folklore, and particularly the second book in the series is a retelling of the Snow Queen, as you mentioned. But it's always said, I like to ground my stories in the contemporary world and then spin the paranormal elements from there.
Well, and while this young woman is dealing with all of these mystical things that are going on in her life, she's also dealing with a lot of the things that high school girls everywhere deal with. Was that part of what you wanted to do, where it's grounded enough in reality that readers can recognize themselves in it?
Yes, certainly. I think that every reader of a story, to some degree, they want to put themselves into the book. And they, and it was fun. And of course, these are things that I went through myself. And every writer taps into their own personal experiences to build a world. And so she goes to homecoming. She meets a guy who has his own magical abilities. There are the normal pressures of being the new girl, which are difficult for her. Her parents are going through a divorce as well. So, that is one of the ways that fiction writers complicate things for their protagonists. We start with a lot of messy situations, being the new girl, a divorce in the family, and then we throw as many rocks at them as we can. So she has this new paranormal ability that she certainly didn't ask for. It's just part of her birthright. This guy is complicating things because they seem to have tension and possibly some history that she doesn't even remember or is aware of. And then, of course, there is an antagonist who doesn't want her in town, and she has to figure out who or what it is that really eventually her life is at stake.
Well, and we have just a moment here to start this answer. You've written for adults. You've written more traditional novels. What made you want to write for teens?
I think as a writer, we all try to grow. And at first I was writing, and I do have an adult novel. And then I started experimenting. Certainly I knew that the market was calling for a lot of young adult, and I was the mother of teens at the time. So experimenting with that first person teen voice proved very successful for me.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with three young adult novelists who are based in Iowa. With me, Wendy Del Sol. She's the author of the Stork Trilogy, Sarah Prineas, author of Ash and Bramble and other books, and Molly Baucus, author of The Princesses of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about young adult fiction, and we would love to hear from you as well. Are you an adult who reads young adult fiction? What's the attraction for you? Are your kids reading young adult fiction? What are your feelings about how this category has changed and evolved over recent years? Let us know. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me this hour, I have three young adult novelists. Wendy Del Sol is the author of the Stork Trilogy. She lives in Des Moines. Sarah Prineas has written many books for younger readers. Her young adult novel that just came out a little while ago is Ash and Bramble. It's a retake of the Cinderella story. Molly Baucus is here with us. She's the author of The Princesses of Iowa. And Molly, I'll ask you the question I just asked Wendy. What drew you to writing for this audience? You were talking earlier about teaching middle school students, so I'm sure that had a little bit to do with it. But what made this attractive to you?
Yeah, it really was. Teaching was a big part of it. I was an English teacher, and so I was always on the lookout for great literature for kids. But also, I myself, as a kid, as a teen, experienced a big gap in literature that was available to me. When I was, you know, in upper elementary school, I was reading a lot of sort of teen pulp, I guess you might say, The Babysitter's Club, Sweet Valley High, you know, that kind of sort of easy teen fiction. And then when I was in sixth or seventh grade, my mom and my teacher sat me down and said, you know, these books are too easy for you. You're not being challenged. You need to read books that are, you know, like appropriate reading level for you, which I was confused and sort of irritated by as a kid, because these books were about teenagers who were older than me. Like, I was like 11, and these were stories about teenage girls. So they were, you know, older and cooler than me, but they were at a very easy reading level. And then my seventh grade English teacher gave me some pretty inappropriate suggestions of things to read that were, you know, a good reading level for me, but like the subject matter was not.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, she recommended that I read The Clan of the Cave Bear series.
Oh my goodness, are you kidding me?
You guys remember that?
Yes.
So, for anyone who doesn't remember that, it's basically 50 Shades of Grey, but in a cave.
Right.
and so I was reading that when I was, you know, 12 or 13 years old, and thinking like, what?
Oh, you know, my goodness. So yeah, you had some bad guidance.
I had some bad guidance. And yeah, so, and I was really frustrated when I was a kid. I was like, well, are these my only two options? You know, books about teenagers that are too easy to read, or books about grown-ups that are like too sexy. And, you know,
oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. But, and then also, as you know, as an English teacher, I think I thought a lot about sort of building a bridge, I guess, between, and again, I was writing about, I started working on this about 10 years ago. So the the second golden age of young adult fiction wasn't, you know, fully on a roll yet, I guess. But I was thinking about, how do we build a bridge for kids between the great, great literature that they get in, you know, in upper elementary, Newbery Award winner type books. You know, we all, I think we remember books like Number the Stars or Dicey's Song or Bridge to Terabithia, those kinds of books. And that kind of great literature. And then, you know, next thing I think kids see is like Faulkner, you know, or James Joyce. And so how do we create a literary bridge between the literature of childhood and then the literature of adulthood, which you start getting in high school?
Interesting. And so that's what you wanted to be a part
of. Yeah. Yeah. I really set out to write like a literary young adult novel. my goal.
And Sarah, let me ask you, what drew you? I mean, you started with a middle grade stuff, which you did quite a lot of. What drew you to young adult fiction?
Well, the category of middle grade, the categories, they're like bookstore categories, publisher categories.
Which, but you know a lot about, because you also are a bookseller at Prairie Lights
Bookstore.
Prairie
Lights, that's right. But those are categories that are really different in a lot of ways. Like I've published 7 middle grade books. And middle grade books are, and this is a generalization, a vast generalization, but they are oftentimes about a kid who acts in the world and has adventures. And they tend to be fairly outward-looking. YA does, like, some of the things that Molly and Wendy have been talking about, looking at facades and then ripping them down, you know, the kind of digging down deep into emotions. And the other thing that's really cool about YA that was compelling to me is that YA is written for an audience of readers for whom the world is new. And they're going out and experiencing all these firsts, their first kiss, the first time they fell in love, the first time they knew someone who died, the first time they knew someone who had to go to the hospital for a terrible illness. You know, some younger kids, of course, have to deal with that kind of things. But really, it's most intense, I think, and like emotionally and hormonally intense for the young adult reader. And so I was drawn, after writing all these middle grades, I was really drawn to this idea of let's see what I can do. And I bet Molly and Wendy have experienced this too, where I'm writing a kind of literature that is pushing really close to the moment of the experience. It's so immediate and it's so emotional and it's so somehow, even if you're writing fantasy or a fairy tale, it's real.
Well, and readers at this age read with an incredible intensity. Is that something that was appealing to you too?
Yes, definitely. Those readers, like when young adult readers come into Prairie Lights and they're like, oh, I read this. I loved it so much. It's like they're just like they hug the book to them and they love it and they want more like it too. You know, they want the next thing that author wrote, or they want the bookseller to step in and say, oh, well, if you like that, then try this thing over here. And they do. They do. They're really voracious, enthusiastic readers.
Well, and Molly, maybe you can talk about that as well from a teacher's perspective. I mean, these readers, a friend of mine who, Daniel Pinkwater, who's written a lot of children's books, he once said to me, well, the reason I write for kids is because kids are great readers. Adults read to fall asleep. Kids read because they love books. I mean, Molly, you've witnessed that firsthand as well. Is that part of what drew you to this?
It honestly wasn't something I thought about while I was writing, but it is something I've come to really appreciate since I've been published. A few years ago, I did an event in Chicago for, you know, I guess it was open to everyone, but only eighth grade girls showed up. And a friend of mine who writes nonfiction for adults came with me, and these girls were just sort of flinging themselves at me, and they were like, I just love you. This is my favorite book. I gave it a billion stars on Goodreads. You're my favorite. And they were like, you look just like Emma Stone. Are you related to her? And they were just so enthusiastic. And my friend who writes, you know, for adults was like, ah, I see why you write for teenagers. She's like, my audience never just flings themselves at me like that. And so it's very gratifying. I mean, it is true that I think adults, it's hard as an adult to love a book in the same way that you loved books when you were a kid. I mean, just with complete sincerity and enthusiasm. And also, I think kids read really closely and they reread books that they truly love. And so they really catch the things, you know, I get a lot of emails from kids that are asking me questions and about really subtle things that I honestly don't remember. I have to go back and look it up. Whereas, like, my best friend's mom told me that she skipped all the descriptive parts in my novel. And I was like, oh, thanks. And so I think, yeah, it's really gratifying to write for kids because they're incredible. They're great readers. They're great fans. They're very, very smart. Yeah, they're a fun audience.
Well, and Wendy, the relationship that you can have with young readers in this day and age with all of this technology is also pretty extraordinary. Do you find yourself interacting with readers of the Stork Trilogy?
Yeah, absolutely. And everything that Sarah and Molly said is so true about the enthusiasm for this genre of fiction and nonfiction even too. Bloggers, book bloggers, I cannot say enough about the young book bloggers out there. And I know the publishing houses couldn't be happier to have that sort of support. And it's genuine. They really, you know, they are just lovers of book and they want to spread the word. They want to share. They want to reveal covers. They want to do interviews with you. There are contests and giveaways, and teachers and librarians reach out to you as well, and they want to engage their readers. So online, there's just such a potential to connect with the readers and those who get books into the hands of young readers. So yes, very dynamic and such a great, great opportunity for, you know, for us as readers to have, you know, to be, really have communication, direct communication via the internet with those who are reading our books.
Well, and Sarah, you posted the other day a picture that somebody had sent to you inspired by one of your middle grade books. And it was a really beautiful drawing. Have you been surprised by some of the really extraordinary artwork and time that some of your readers have invested?
Yeah, I mean, like fan art, fanfic. There's, you know, there's fan written extensions of my stories. My characters, my stories that the fans take and make their own. And I think that's one of the really cool things about fiction written for those young audiences, which is that they really do. They take it and they make it their own. They feel ownership. And that can sometimes, you know, it can sometimes be a little fraught because it extends to the author. You know, like Molly talking about people flinging themselves at her. You know, they're like, oh, you know, you're my new best friend. And you're like, yeah, no, I don't think really you are. But, you know, it's a relationship that is full of excitement and energy.
Now, you are the one here who has sort of crossed that boundary from writing for kids to writing for tweens and mm-hmm. teens. Mm-hmm. Are there guidelines that tell you, you know, what makes this young adult fiction as opposed to what makes this middle grade fiction?
You know, when I wrote my first book, The Magic Thief, which is a middle grade, which means it's intended for readers ages 8 to 12, I sent it to my agent, and I did not know at that point that it was a children's book. I thought she was going to send it to adult publishers. And she clued me in that it was, in fact, a middle grade book. So I have not always been all that aware of the differences between writing for kids and writing adults for adults. And one of the things about these books that we're writing, I think, is important. And we, you know, we talk about the young readership, but really our readership is much broader than that. You know, just to sort of segue to a new topic, which is our readers are grown-ups. Really, they are, especially YA. And I think Wendy and Molly will probably corroborate this, that it's a blurred category. We're ostensibly writing for teenagers, but many, many, many adults are picking up our books.
Well, and Molly, I'm sure that's very true with your book. Is that part of your experience as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have a lot of adult book clubs reading my book, and a lot of like middle-aged men will come up to me and say like, oh, this really helped me get into the head of teenagers. And I'm like, great, good. But I was aware of that as I was writing. So I think there are very specific things in my novel that are just for teens, and there are sort of other jokes and references that are more for people my age, and I was okay with that there are things that a teenage reader is maybe not going to understand, and that was more a shout out to the adults that were reading it, and there are also things that I think are a little more earnest and breathless than an adult reader usually expects or appreciates, and that's just for the teens. So it's a weird thing to, you know, it's a weird line to walk as you're writing, thinking that I have two kind of very different audiences that I'm trying to please at the same time.
Well, that is very interesting. And Wendy, you were talking earlier about the sort of first person narrative, the excitement that is driven by that, and you actually write in third person, second person is pretty weird.
That would be
there have been a couple novels like that, but third person. But that kind of excitement that is driven by that, I mean, that appeals to everybody. I like to pick up a book that really draws me along and keeps me turning pages. And sometimes I read a lot of adult novels, but sometimes I get a little mired down in them. I mean, Wendy, that's not necessarily for teenagers, right?
Well, yeah, and my adult novel is third person from multiple perspectives, and Stork is written first person. However, and yes, and it's a very chatty, you're able to be very chatty with that first person and have kind of, yeah, that breathy voice that the teen has. But I did purposely involve other generations in the story. So both of her parents, I developed the characters. They have full backstories and personalities, as well as there is an older female mentor. Her name is Hulda, and she's one of these, she's a stork as well, like Katla. So And from adult readers, I do hear that they appreciated that there were other generations in the teen story. And one of the bigger houses passed on the story because they wanted me to rewrite it and to remove all of the other generations.
Oh, wow.
And my agent was very, very strong in that, and Candlewick Press, too. They said, no, that's one of the things we really like about this story. So I'm glad we stuck to it.
Absolutely. Well, and it's interesting. I wonder, with publishing, do you think sometimes there are some myths about what these younger readers are looking for, Sarah? You have the don't get me started on that look.
I think that publishers, I kind of hate to say this out loud, they're really conservative. They're really looking at the bottom line. So they're looking at trends. They're looking at categories that have sold really well before. And they're trying to replicate that success. And I hate to say it, but that's not how you get to the best new books. You get to them by experimenting and finding new authors and trying new things.
And taking some chances. All right,
yeah.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Sarah Prineas, Molly Bacchus, and Wendy Del Sol, three young adult novelists who live in Iowa. We'd love to hear from you as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about young adult fiction. With me, three young adult novelists who are based here in Iowa. Fantasy writer Sarah Prineas. Her most recent book is Ash and Bramble, which is a very modern take on the Cinderella story. She lives in Iowa City, in the Iowa City area. Molly Bacchus is the author of The Princesses of Iowa. She's getting her MFA at Iowa State University right now. She's talking to us today from New Mexico. Wendy Del Sol is the author of The Stork Trilogy, and she lives in Des Moines. We also want to hear from you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've gotten a couple emails that I want to share. This one's from Jane in Des Moines. She said, I just heard my childhood reading experience. So Molly, you are not alone. She said, I read books that were fun in subject matter, easy to understand, but was also told around age 10 or 11 they weren't appropriate for my reading level. My mother also gave me Clan of the Cave Bear at that age. A child may understand the words, but there were a great many books read without context, which I think is really funny. I had a friend who had a similar experience, except her mom got fed up with her reading those teen romance novels, the Young Love series, I think they were called. And she gave her Jane Eyre in like fourth or fifth grade, which I know she didn't finish. But that is really interesting. And I want to talk about this idea that maybe we're in the second golden age of young adult fiction. And the people who are saying that say that the first golden age came in the 1970s, actually, with the Judy Blume books, et cetera. And I don't know, from my perspective, I think maybe this is the third golden age, because I love the turn of the century novels by Lucy Maud Montgomery. And there's some wonderful, I would call that, young adult fiction. But Wendy, I'd love to hear your take on it. How do you feel this time plays into sort of a historical context of this kind of writing?
Well, it's very dynamic. I mean, we talked a little bit about the market forces with publishers, but there are just so many other avenues now for story to be broadcast. So, I mean, I'm not just even talking about self-publishing. I'm talking about small publishers and boutique houses where, you know, they can experiment. They can afford to experiment. So, and, you know, every sort of, you know, YA is just it's a broad category. But within YA, you have every other genre represented. You have mystery and thriller and sweet romance and Christian. And so I think with all the opportunity that the internet has provided for everything to have its place, that there are new types of story out there. And I think I too, like Molly was talking about her reading experiences in junior high. I remember that The Exorcist was the book that we were told we weren't allowed to read it, and we couldn't bring it to school. And nothing is going to fire the imagination more than don't do this. And
yeah.
So I did read it in junior high, and it scared the daylights out of me. And I think that's why I had this bizarre curiosity for the paranormal, even, just because it just – so, I mean, that was – yeah, so that is, of course, from the 70s as well.
Right,
so.
Right. Right.
Kind of a funny anecdote there.
Absolutely. Well, Sarah, I know as a bookseller and a novelist, you have a lot of contact with a lot of different books. So in your from your perspective, I mean, where would you put this period of time in history with young adult novels?
Oh, I mean, I sort of teased you about it at the very beginning and said, oh, second golden age. I think it actually is. It really is a golden age of young adult fiction right now. There's no question, because the literature itself, as Wendy said, has become really broad and represents lots of different categories. Because it's selling incredibly well. I think it's the hottest category in publishing right now. And because it's exploring all of these different areas of experience and life's experience that, maybe weren't available to young readers before. Another thing that's happening in YA right now that's really important, and I'm sure Molly and Wendy will agree, which is that we're seeing much more diversity in representation. We're seeing much more books that much more represent the actual people who are reading them. So, not all of our characters are white middle-class kids anymore, I think in the first golden age, back in the 70s, Judy Blume's books, pretty much most of those books were about that group of people. But there's a really great diversity initiative right now in young adult publishing and in middle grade as well, driven by different constituencies in publishing. But there's an author group called We Need Diverse Books. And it is making a difference. There are so many more books out there that feature characters who are people of color, characters who are, not neurotypical, characters who are LGBT, characters who are going through transition. So it's really exciting. And I think, the golden age is partly because of this particular thing happening, because of diversity happening.
Interesting. And do you feel like there is a shift? Because at the beginning of what people are calling this golden age, of course, we had the Hunger Games explode onto the scene, and then Divergent. A lot of dystopian worlds, post-apocalyptic fiction. Do you feel like that sort of had its moment?
I think that publishers would like that to have had its moment. I think editors are really tired of editing post-apocalyptic and dystopic books. But readers, as we've been talking about these readers as being insatiable, and they still are looking for those books. They still want to read them. They're still going back to The Hunger Games and Divergent. But at the same time, other trends are becoming current. So we saw a lot of, with the success of John Green's books, and his books are still dominating the paperback New York Times bestseller list for young adult. We saw sort of a trend of realistic fiction, or sick lit, as some people call it, when the main character's dying of a terrible disease. and then we saw, we're seeing a lot of YA fantasy. Some people are saying that the next big trend is going to be historical fiction, YA historical fiction, that we're going to have, big events in history as seen through the teenage lens.
Interesting. Well, and there are a lot of people who are concerned about what their kids are reading. And the sort of dystopian books make a lot of parents nervous. I just was part of a conversation on Facebook the other day about one of those transitional readers, a tween, I guess, reading a lot of The Hunger Games, Divergent, that kind of thing, where the world is really bleak, a really bleak place, and there's a lot of violence and stuff like that. And my feeling on that is that adults read these books differently than these kids are reading these books, and whereas I might see the politics and feel really depressed about what has happened to this world that we're living in and all of that, and the violence is disgusting and sickening, I feel like kids are reading it by relating much more to that first person character, and they see a hero who is overcoming all odds and not necessarily experiencing what I'm experiencing as a reader. Molly, as a
former teacher, I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I always think about myself as a reader. When I was young, I loved the Narnia books. And I read them over and over again. And then when I was an adult, I saw the movie adaptation of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I was so surprised that there was a huge battle scene in it. I was like, oh, I guess that happened in the book. But as a kid, that wasn't interesting to me. So I didn't really flesh it out in my imagination. I was much more interested in, you know, hanging out with the beavers in their little beaver house,
right,
and riding the lion around. And so I think that is unique to literature as opposed to TV or movies, that you do get to calibrate it to your own level of comfort and imagination. And so there are things that, you know, that kids, I think, maybe don't even clue into because it's outside of their scope of imagination, or, you know, they're just not interested in it. And so I think you're absolutely right that when adults read things, you're basically reading a different book.
Yeah.
You know,
and Sarah,
so,
I think another thing that kids do, especially with books like the ones you mentioned, Charity, are they see the main character who is the one, you know, she's the one who's going to save the world. That character is a proxy for them. And so whereas we adults may find those books to be grim, the kid readers maybe are saying, well, this is really hopeful because there is one person who can change the world, and that person is me. I am, you know, I'm the main character of Divergent. I'm the main character of the Hunger Games, and I'm going to be the hero. So that sort of proxy situation, I think, makes them really connect strongly to those books in a way that adults just don't.
We have an email. This is from Lori and Clive. She says, my husband, who is in his 60s, started reading young adult novels to help identify with our young daughters. The discussions they have are amazing to listen to. Most of all, he's now the cool dad. We also got another comment from Kate Brennan Hall on Twitter. She says, my book club has current and retired educators. We include at least one YA book each year. In my opinion, it keeps us connected to the next generation. And that's something I think a lot of people do is they read the books that their young people in their lives are reading as a way of figuring out what's going on in their heads and relate to them. Wendy, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I as a parent, while I was watching my two boys go through their teen years, that was fascinating to me, and that drove me in part to write for the teen market. And, you know, there's just something very compelling about that period in our life, and it's no surprise that just on a hormone level, brain circuitry, we're just changing. The teen is changing at such an alarming rate. It is perfectly ripe for story. And it's something that so you were talking about book clubs and anyone really being able to read a teen story and put themselves in it, because every older person has been a teen. So whereas a teen reader hasn't yet experienced parenthood,
right.
I'm going to assume that much, but
it's a little harder to relate to.
Right,
adults.
Yeah, they haven't experienced middle age. So it's just something that we can all relate to and talk about. And we're always looking for ways that, you know, I always brought up my teen years with my boys, even though half the time I think I'd get a little bit of a...
a little eye roll there.
A little bit of an eye roll, yes. Let's call it an eye roll. That's very generous. But it is a way to open up conversation with our, you know, whether they're grandchildren, children, students, and we all share that teen experience.
Right. Well, Rick is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I think I was probably in my 50s, and my wife handed me an e-book, and it was The Book Thief, so I didn't see any of the blurbs. I didn't know what it was all about. And I read it, and I was completely blown away, and the second time I was blown away was when I finished it and realized it was young adult fiction.
Right. Well, and that book was not was not necessarily published as young adult fiction everywhere it was published, but it was published as young adult fiction in the United States. And I asked the author about that, Rick, because, I mean, that's just a beautiful, beautiful novel, whatever category you want to put it in. And he said he loved that it was published as young adult fiction in the United States because he felt like more people read it because it was. But that really surprised you that there was this kind of thing going on in this category?
Yeah, in fact, I was so surprised. I just now checked the Iowa City Public Library catalog, and it is still listed under young adults.
That's so where we sell it at Prairie screener. Lights, too. We sell it in the YA section.
So what I told your screener was I was surprised twice. I was surprised to find out that I was a book snob and that I could like young adult fiction that much.
Well, Rick.
And it also fits in with the historical aspect you were talking about earlier,
too. Oh, yeah,
too,
yep.
So.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for calling. And it brings up we don't have much time to talk about this, but Rick brings up a really important thought. I mean, there is some derision directed toward adults who read young adult fiction. And I have to say, by extension, there's some derision about young adult fiction. I mean, Sarah, do you feel like it's looked down on?
You know, both Wendy and Molly have mentioned that their parents and Jane, who wrote in, mentioned that their parents governed what they were reading, right? Their parents were like, oh, you can't read this because it's too young for you. Well, I think we see, you know, adults doing the same things to themselves, that they're saying, well, you know what, I should be doing is reading adult, literary fiction, when really what's more fun and, you know, more engaging is the YA. So I think there is a stigma. I think, as Rick found out, having an ebook version is really cool because then you don't have a cover, you don't have anything giving it away that you're reading YA. But I think, you know, adult readers are really eager to embrace YA.
Well, and Molly, I know that when you were setting out to write your book, you wanted to make sure that it was literary. I mean, when we read through things in this category, some of the writing is beautiful and amazing and mind-blowing, and some of it is not. Some of it feels manufactured and maybe churned out, and the writing's not as careful. But I mean, you felt strongly about, no matter who you were writing for, you wanted it to be good writing.
Yes, absolutely. And I have been told that it doesn't matter. You know, I've been told by fellow writers, actually, unfortunately, that teens don't care about the writing and all they care about the story. And so I need to stop like being so precious about my sentences. And my response to that is I don't care. I'm going to write, I'm going to write to my own highest standards. And I think teens deserve really good literature. And I think there is, as you said, so much fiction out there right now that is just beautiful, beautiful, complex, challenging. There are, you know, young adult books that I had to read twice because I was like, wow, this is hard. And so I'm thinking specifically of Codename Verity, which came out a few years ago and is just astonishing and complicated and beautiful. And I do think it's a shame that people overlook that and sort of dismiss all young adult as being like Twilight. But I also think it's silly to police what anyone's reading. You know, who cares? Read what you want. Read what makes you happy.
Molly, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Charity.
Molly Bacchus is the author of The Princesses of Iowa. Wendy Del Sol, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Wendy Del Sol is the author of The Stork Trilogy. She lives in Des Moines. And Sarah Prineas, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Sarah Prineas is the author most recently of Ash and Bramble. She lives in the Iowa City area, and hopefully this golden age will continue for a good long time. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.